Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Rolling. Nickety knee, Nima V.
What it do, Michael W. Dean?
I am healthy, well, and wise. I've been up all night.
Yeah.
But nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong at all. You always call me on the tail end of your night, and I'm just getting up.
I know. We're supposed to podcast like tomorrow afternoon, and I called you, and I'm like, dude, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, no, I don't think we're going to do that. And then we just talk about some bullshit. And then you're like, man, we're podcasting already. Just turn your mic on.
I'm
like,
I know. All right. I
guess I'll drink my breakfast and we'll get at it.
I know. We're just chatting and you're like, oh, let's do it tomorrow. And like 20 minutes later into this deep philosophical discussion about the morality of voting for Ron Paul or not, I'm like, dude.
So.
Did you know that dogs are the same species as wolves?
I thought they were related. I didn't know they were the same species.
They are the same species. There's a subspecies, which is dogs, but they are the same species.
What is it that makes you say they're the same species? Do they have the same DNA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they are so close that it's not like they're in the same family. Like wolves and dogs and foxes and coyotes are in the same family.
Right.
But they're not all the same species. But a poodle is the same fucking species as a wolf, man.
See, now how does that work? How is a chihuahua the same species as a wolf?
Well, I don't know. How does a, you know, short, fat white person be the same species as a tall, slender black person?
Right, right. So how are Manute Bol and Brittany Murphy the same species kind of thing?
Who and who?
Manute Bol and Brittany Murphy.
Who's Manute Bol?
He's like a 7'6" black dude who played basketball.
Or, you know, Kathy Bates and Brittany Murphy are the same species.
Okay, there you go. We'll keep them the same race for PC purposes, I guess.
I heard you did a good description of political correctness. It's the belief that you can pick up a turd by the clean end.
I dig it. Yeah, I hate PC, man. It riles me. I hate the concept that you need to watch what you say because you might offend somebody. I feel like if I'm going to offend somebody, then, you know, that's that person's fault. If they don't want to be offended, then they shouldn't listen. Now, if I'm trying to get something from somebody, if I want some type of business transaction or relationship with some person, then I'm going to try my best not to offend them. But if it's a situation where I'm podcasting or speaking my opinions, then those are just going to come, you know, straight off the dome. I'm not going to care about what groups or subsets I might offend.
Interestingly, in England, it's a crime to be racist.
I've heard as such, but how do they really word a crime like that?
I don't know, but it is. And interestingly, though, I've been thinking a lot about like censorship in England because I've been watching English sitcoms and they say fuck all the time and show people fucking on them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't see anything wrong with showing people fucking or saying fuck. I mean,
They also do skits, funny skits about Hitler, which, you know, in America would be considered racist, but in England you can get arrested for being racist, but apparently a Hitler joke doesn't make them go too soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing with laws is they have to be interpreted by people. So if you make a law that says, you know, to the effect that it's illegal to be racist, then the only people that are going to get arrested are people that the government doesn't like, or people that the people in the government don't like. So, you know, your BBC producers or your popular sitcoms, they obviously get a pass.
I was just going to say, I think if you're popular, you can get away with it. I've been watching the show Peep Show, horribly named, hilarious situational comedy from Channel 4, which is the, I think, the one non-BBC channel of the four channels you can get.
So how does the whole BBC thing work in England? Are they state-run? State-run, and so most of the channels in England are, all except, I guess, this Channel 4 thing, are all state enterprises?
Yeah, which Channel 4 looks like a clone of BBC 3, so, you know, whatever. Wow.
Yeah, how statist and square is that? You have one channel called the BBC that, well, one company called the BBC.
Three channels.
Right, but it's all one company. They just have three versions of it. BBC One, BBC yeah. Two, BBC Three.
Yeah, it's like the news propaganda pablum, the entertainment pablum, you know, with the Benny Hill pablum, and the titillating pablum, the pablum where you can say f***. We don't even say f*** on a podcast, and you can apparently say f*** on British television.
Well, we say f*** all the time. You just bleep it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking of how grand we are, our Alexa ranking is 253,037.
Nice. Still moving on up.
Yeah, and we're about to close in on the Free State Project's website, which is, their Alexa ranking is 224,930.
Sweet, sweet. Yeah.
That's kind of mind-blowing to me, because I remember, like, when I first got into Liberty, the Free State site to me was like the Bible. I mean, that site seemed like the most amazing thing in the world, and that's the site where I got a lot of my education, was chatting with people on there. I mean, I said it before, there's a thread that's still on there of me saying, well, I think pot should be legal, but taxed and regulated, and I don't think speech and heroin and coke should be legal, and they schooled me.
Yeah, yeah. On the forums, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I never really go to the Free State website. I guess what sort of schooled me was, you know, the Ron Paul campaign in 2008, and then getting involved with the Campaign for Liberty. And then they always linked to lewrockwell.com, and that became my regular daily visit. You know, every day I'd visit Lou Rockwell, and then I got into anti-war. And so it was mostly websites that did it for me, and more of the older websites. You know, I think Free State is sort of the young, hip version, but I think Lou Rockwell, anti-war, that's more of the, you know, Lou Rockwell's not as scholarly as Mises, but it's more scholarly than like us or Free Talk Live.
I know. We're far from scholarly.
Yeah.
We're for people who would be really turned off by things that are scholarly.
Yeah, yeah. We're street libertarians. Yeah. We're that dude that stands on the corner preaching about God, except instead of God, we're preaching about non-aggression.
Yep. And if we're too scholarly, even in our non-scholarliness, if we're too scholarly for you, you can check out Disindoctrination Podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, good stuff. I've been listening. Definitely keep up the good work, guys. Garrett Fox over there, Disindoctrination Podcast, digging it.
Yep, I call them Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure of Liberty. Not Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Wayne's World of Liberty.
Wayne's
and I
World,
say that
there you go. Okay.
In the best way possible. It's a compliment.
Yeah, yeah.
They remind me of Wayne's World, but they're talking about libertarianism instead of Aerosmith.
Real talk for real people, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we have some new t-shirts that Rowan Dow made, the Not On Board t-shirts, and I'll link them.
Oh, yeah. I take off on the whole, what is it, baby on board thing?
Yeah, nah. And it says Not On Board, and it's got a Freedom Fiends URL in the corner.
Right, right. Because you can, you know, have your whole political circus, you can talk about social contracts, just know one thing, the Fiends are not on board that train of gay.
The train of gay?
Yeah.
Of Gerald Gay?
Ah, nice segue. Go ahead and tell us what you got going on with Gerald Gay.
I got some more stuff before that.
Just a teaser then. And, okay.
I'm cool with the gays. So those of you who don't know hip-hop vernacular of the streets, yo. No, we're not on board with statism and collectivism is what that means.
Right, right. I just mean gay in the sense of lame.
I know.
I guess
a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think, I have no problem with saying that's gay as a diss, but, you know, I don't want anyone tuning in for the first time to actually think you were saying, we're not on board with them gays.
Yeah, that's not what this podcast is about.
No, that would be kind of diametrically opposed to, I mean, I wouldn't be dating one, but you know, I'm fine with them marrying. I think more people should push for legal polygamy too, and I think the gays should be on board with that too.
Yeah, I think so too. The problem is, you know, everybody in American status society these days, whenever they want to push for their freedoms, they always try to justify it with, well, I'm not like for these other people's freedoms. Yeah. I'm not saying people should marry dogs and multiple women. I'm just saying I should be able to marry a dude. Or the pot smokers are like, let us smoke our pot and go spend all that money chasing the meth addicts.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's all be inclusive here. Why not I fight for you freedom and you fight for my freedom, and then we don't have to worry about the state taking away everybody's freedom.
Besides, if I weren't happily married, I probably would have a harem. That appeals to me.
Does it?
Yeah. But you know, when I was in a rock band, I was dating 8 women at once at one point. No, 7. And the saying I came up with was, dating 7 women isn't 7 times the fun, it's 7 times the hassle, and one of them always feels like killing you.
Yes.
Which, if you're dating 7 women, one of them always does feel like killing you.
Oh, I would imagine 6 or 7 of them would feel like killing you.
Yeah, but it was good times. I mean, one else, there'd be times when one would be, you know, coming in my house while the other was leaving out the same door, and they'd say hi to each other on the way and know what they were there for.
I don't know if I could handle much more than one woman. I have enough trouble handling just one.
It was definitely worth doing, so I could say I've done it, but I wouldn't want to do it again.
Fair enough. So what else we got on the agenda there, Michael?
Every single Freedom Fiends episode is now up on YouTube.
Excellent. Yeah. And that was definitely a case of
fiend sourcing. It was me, Chris Calder, Daniel Veazey, Aaron Toppin, and David Crow. And David Crow and Chris Calder are going to put the new ones up as they come up within 2 or 3 days of them coming out.
That's awesome. Yeah. So fiend presence on YouTube as well.
Yep. And we got 2 donations, both anonymous, one for $5 and one for $20. I'd like to say thank you, and we invite more of them.
Oh, yeah. And if you're listening to us on YouTube or you came across us through YouTube, go ahead and let us know on the talkback line and let us know what's going on.
Worms.
What you like, what you don't like, all
that. Or just post comments on YouTube. We invite that.
Like listening to the Freedom Fiends but want them to listen to you? Contact the Fiends at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com.
So I wanted to explain a remark last week that I forgot to explain. Was you said you were moving to Texas, and I said, bleh!
Bleh, yeah, why? Why bleh? I mean, I know why, but tell people.
Because every third Tyranny Today headline we read about police state overstepping of cops is in Texas.
Dude, and it upsets me so much because Texas is so beautiful. I love the people in Texas. It's such a great state. We just need to dissolve the frickin' government there, man. I mean, I'm going to have to pay off some extortion money. I guess they call it a warrant or something when I go back to Texas, man. And, you know, I've been driving my car. I haven't registered my car since I left Texas. So I've still got my Texas plates. And
I think you've actually made money on doing this, though. Think about it.
On leaving Texas because of all the...
No, because the amount of time you haven't had your car registered... And you're going to have like a grand in fines, but you've probably saved more than that in not registering it.
I don't know, man. A grand's a lot of money. And what, if I was registering it, I'd pay like $100 a year. So I've been gone for 3 years.
I was amazed that you got away with, if that's the term, driving that car around Wyoming for 2 or 3 years. How long did you live here?
2 years.
And you had a car with like out-of-state plates with expired registration and a broken windshield the whole time and never got in trouble.
No, I think one time I was asked about it and
I think you were usually riding around like smoking a joint and flipping off everybody and saying "fuck you" over your megaphone out the window and getting a job in the front seat.
That's only in my fantasies. I wouldn't say that on the air. But the thing is, Texas is where I want to be, and it really sucks that you have to choose where you want to go, or you, that if you choose where you want to go, you still have to deal with the tyranny of the state pretty much everywhere. I mean, there was people hassling me in Wyoming, not as much, and there's people that hassle in Washington State. The worst thing about Texas, though, is it's such a money game. Like, a ticket in Texas, like, bare bones is going to be $250. The same ticket in Wyoming or here in Washington State is going to be less than 100. You know, I really don't understand how the people in Texas don't just get completely fed up with it and kick the bums out, like, and just dissolve the state. You need to do that, like, now, so I can move back.
In the next 3 months, yes, please eliminate all tyranny in the
as a favor to NEMA. Come on, it's the least you can do.
In the geographic region known as Texas. I mean, I'd think that they would want to not want more tyranny, at least, because they seceded at one point. They were a country for a minute.
No, but see, the thing is, they want their own tyranny. They're fine with tyranny as long as it comes from Austin. They just don't want tyranny from D.C.
Right. Most people into state rights are, they want state tyranny instead of federal. Which brings me to Gerald Gay. Gerald Gay is our friend. Talk about Gerald Gay a little bit, what we've had with him.
Well, when we met Gerald Gay, he was running for state representative in Wyoming. Really nice guy. Me and Michael, mostly Michael, helped him make a commercial where he was doing some cool shooting tricks. He's a trick shooter. Like, he does this thing where he puts two tin cans on top of each other, one filled with water. He'll shoot the bottom one out. When the top one pops up, he'll shoot that out of the air. Lots of cool stuff he can do as far as shooting. And so we made a video of him, a YouTube commercial of him shooting things that were tyrannical, like cap and trade and Obamacare and stuff like that. And we helped him basically get elected or reelected.
And he says we got it. Yeah. He was a state congressman 10 years ago for one term, 2 years. And we helped him get reelected when he decided to run again.
And he was running against this statist nanny ho.
This Nancy Pelosi type.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this lady who's like 106 and thinks Pelosi's God.
Right. It was like Nancy Pelosi and Rosie O'Donnell had a mutated love child.
And Gerald won. And he says we helped this commercial, which actually ran on TV too, helped him get elected. So the fact that he's turning his back on what he ran on a platform of gun rights. You know, he ran on a platform of basically gun rights. He also had some things that he believed that I wasn't on board with. But this was back when I thought the lesser of two evils is worth working for. You know, and he didn't really show his true colors. Basically, like, he got elected on being strong on gun rights. And then all his other stuff came out. And I didn't like him as much, but I still kind of liked him as a person. You know, he's really English first, hates Muslims, doesn't like gay people, thinks drugs should be illegal. All these other horrible things kind of came out about him. And I kind of went, yeah, well, he's a politician, whatever, but at least he's still strong on guns. And the other day they had a vote in Wyoming for this bill that would strengthen basically gun control in Wyoming. It basically put into writing, it's weird because it's like most government buildings here say no guns allowed and it's a crime to bring them in and they have metal detectors, but I guess there's a few where you don't. Like, I think City Hall in Gillette was one of them. And they wanted to do what Wyoming often does, which is put something into law that's basically already law, but they codified it, which allows more laws to spring from it like a disease. He voted yes on it. He voted yes to expand gun-free zones in Wyoming.
Why? Why, Gerald? Why?
I know. And I sent him an email today. The subject line is, why'd you vote aye on HB 70? And I put a link to the voting record where it says he voted yes. And I says, that bill violates the Wyoming state constitution as well as the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. It's a gun grabber bill. Nancy Pelosi would love that bill. It allows the camel's nose under the tent for a lot more gun-free zones and other gun control. You've lost my vote, brother.
Yeah.
Michael. And when I say vote, I don't vote anyway.
You mean your vote of confidence.
My support. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got to put it in language that he can understand. Because also, it's more for us evil and wrong because it violates natural rights.
Right.
Not just, you know, some piece of paper that was written hundreds of years ago as vis-a-vis the Constitution. But if you say that to Gerald, he won't know what the hell you're meaning because he's a statist.
Yeah. And this bill has an exemption for people that have permission from a judge in the building or the security officer of that building. In other words, politicians and cops.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it doesn't apply to him probably.
Right. Which is another horrible thing about government. Like we were saying earlier with the England PC laws, you only enforce it against people you don't like. And if you're popular enough or if you know the right people, you get a pass. And that's why having laws like this doesn't do anybody any good, because the favored don't have to worry about the rule of law. It's just another tool for them to oppress the average person.
Yeah. I mean, really, my email to him should have said, "Hey, Gerald, you're acting like a politician in your job as a politician." You know, he promised one thing, he put on one face, then once elected, did the complete opposite.
Right.
This is disappointing me because, you know, I mean, this stuff happens every day at all levels of government, but I kind of looked at this guy as a friend. He's been to my house, I've been to his house, he gave me a Christmas present, and I helped him get elected and bragged about him. That's the main thing. On a lot of websites, I was like, "Hey, check out how cool Wyoming's politicians are," you know, to like my friends in New York and California. And they're like, "Oh my God, that's so cool."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a good lesson, I guess, that you and I have learned, that you can't trust a politician, even if there's somebody you know personally and you think you can trust them. Yeah. Once you're there in that state house or in that legislature, it's all about a game. And they look at it as a game, but the laws they pass, the moves they make in that game affect real people's lives, and they hurt real people. And it's a game that needs to stop being played.
Well, Gerald Gay has broken my heart, no homo. But never again. Never again am I going to trust any politician with anything.
Good, good. Yeah, and maybe that had to happen. Maybe it's poetic justice. Yeah. Maybe you had to have a soft spot for a politician who seemed like a good guy. And, you know, on a personal level, he is a good guy. He's a nice guy. He's friendly. You know, we went out shooting with him.
He does refer to gay people as sodomites, though.
Does he really?
Yes. Yeah, he actually asked the state legislature, I read somewhere that he asked the state legislature to use the word homosexual instead of gay when referring to gay people.
Because his last name is Gay.
Yeah, which to me sounds like kindergarten or something, but I don't know. I don't know how Robert's Rules of Order work. I mean, I know how they work, and I don't like using them, so.
Right.
I don't know how "don't hurt my feelings" would work in a parliamentary setting, but.
Well, that's a politician in a nutshell then, isn't it? They smile to your face, and then they write a law behind your back.
Yeah. Haven't heard back from him yet. I think he's ignoring it because he gets up, you know, I set this at midnight last night, and he gets up every day at 6 or 7, and, you know, haven't heard from him.
Well, shame, Gerald, shame. And I don't trust you to, you know, do anything good, but, you know, if you've got any integrity, then you would maybe disavow this and, I don't know, vote correctly in the future.
That's kind of... Asking that is kind of undoing everything we just said about politicians and politics in general.
I guess you're right. Yeah, you're right. You know, there's really nothing you can say at this point, except that there's no trust you can place in the system. It's a broken system, and mankind needs to move past the idea that electing certain quote-unquote representatives to make your decisions for you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like whenever, you know, we always read stuff on this podcast about horrible things politicians do and how two-faced they are and how they flip-flop, but it's never anybody that's our neighbor, you know? It's never like someone that you've spent quality time with.
Right. So. And you know, that's a good point to make too. You know, government soils the water, it pollutes wherever it's at, because in Wyoming and, like I was saying, in Texas, you know, the people in those places are really good and for the most part follow the non-aggression principle and understand that personal relationships and contracts are important. I remember when I got my my apartment in Casper, my landlady, you know, it was a negotiation. She had a policy against dogs, but I had her meet my dog. We talked. We shook hands. We didn't even sign a contract at the beginning. She shook my hand. She said, "Here in Wyoming, that's all we need. I'll take you at your word. Your word is important here." And it was, you know, the people in places like this, they're good people. But you throw a few of them in a big house that was built with stolen money and you call it a state house or a legislature, and those people get corrupted because there's power involved.
Yep. Worms.
And now, some corporate whoring for one of our favorite products.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Howdy, I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmith's. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmith's. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kiddies.
Vaporsmith's e-cigs revolutionize nicotine ingestion by bringing it into the 21st century. With Vaporsmith's, you'll enjoy all the invigorating nicotine with none of the nasty smoke. Vaporsmith's are clean, efficient, and tasty. Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Vaporsmiths. I'm enjoying one right now. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the road to freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So the name of this podcast is Are Libertarians Crazy?
Yes.
Which I picked for a couple reasons. One is because I think it's really good SEO, because I thought of, like, what would people search about liberty? And I think that's something people probably search a lot. and the other thing is, it's a good topic. I mean, I'm thinking, like, here we are complaining that our politicians passed a bill that keeps citizens from bringing guns into a courthouse or a city hall. I think a lot of Americans would go, that bill makes total sense, and I can't believe your state doesn't have it yet. You're crazy.
Well, in an insane world, the sane seem crazy. And it's important to note that true libertarians, they disregard the whole paradigm. That whole left-right, Republican-Democrat, normal people, soccer mom kind of thing. We just don't buy into it.
Yeah.
So our ideas and our opinions are going to come from a completely different angle, an angle that the mainstream might find crazy just because they've never heard of such a thing. They don't understand it. It doesn't seem to make sense because it doesn't fit in their worldview.
I got a joke really quick. It's totally unrelated, but it's good. Casper is so dead that our airport baggage code is CPR. It is.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I dig it.
Talk about why people think libertarians are crazy and why we're not. I mean, one, you know, there's a running joke I have is that, you know, people say, do libertarians want heroin to be sold in vending machines? And the answer is, well,
yes.
Yes, if if the machines are privately owned and operated.
There you go.
Which
you go.
Sounds crazy and nutty, and I don't know that all libertarians would actually go that far, whatever that means. But I came up with a really good definition of libertarians the other day, is a libertarian deals with loud TV commercials by hitting mute. A statist deals with loud TV commercials by writing their congressman.
There you go. There you go. And maybe that's why people think we're crazy, is because, you know, the average person grows up thinking that there's a system, there's a social contract. If you want change, you have to do it by political means. If you want freedom, you have to make sure it's approved and licensed, and there has to be a due process of government bureaucracy in order for anything to happen. And libertarians don't think that government bureaucracy is valid, beneficial, or moral.
A lot of people call themselves minarchists, and I did until recently. Minarchists are people who think that there should be government for, you know, minarchists are people, they say, who think that government doesn't do things well, so government should only do really important things. Minarchists think, well, their government should be eliminated completely except for maybe defensive military, the roads, international treaties, and fire departments or something. And I think that that would be valid if they were voluntary governments where people got together and paid for those services, where you could opt out. You know, that's panarchy, is you pick your own government. But really, minarchy is a form of statism. And a lot of people don't know this. We hear the word statism thrown around as an insult. You and I do it all the time, Nima. But
yeah.
Statism is actually originally a neutral term used by political scientists to describe that government should have some level of economic or social policy control. I mean, statism covers everything from minarchy to totalitarianism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anarchists are the only people who are not statists in some way.
Right, right. Or voluntarists or whatever else you want to call
agorists,
yourself.
Agorists, yeah. There's a whole bunch of non-state type people. And
right.
The thing is, to a lot of people, talking about eliminating the state or ignoring the state, I mean, not only sounds crazy, it sounds like treason that should be punishable by death. it's not crazy. I mean, when you think about all of the violence that governments do.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, people don't think about that. They don't look at the unseen causes of violence. Like me, I look at, you know, the drug war or somebody who's off themselves or somebody who's maybe become mentally unstable because they're taking big pharma's pills because the government mandated it. And I always look back and I look back at the aggression of the state as being the root cause of that. The average person who's a statist, they were never taught about the aggression of the state. They were never taught about the non-aggression principle. So they look at those things and they just go, oh, some people are crazy. Oh, some people are bad. I'm sure glad we have a government to throw those bad people in jail. They don't think about the root cause. They only scratch the surface. And then you have the corporate and media who's so aligned with the status quo and so aligned with the state, reinforcing that on a pretty much 24/7 basis. There are people that turn on the TV from when they get home and leave it on throughout the night. They only turn it off when they go to work in the morning.
No, they leave it on for their pets.
Yeah, they leave it on for the pets, and it's on 24/7.
They leave it on for the imaginary burglar that's going to break into their house. Well, I've actually done that in a shitty neighborhood. I'd leave my stereo playing when I left so people think someone was there and be slightly less likely to kick in the door.
Or they think, damn, that dude's got a banging system. Let's run up in that house, cuz.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people, I think there are politicians who don't even see the gun under the pile of papers. The, you know, the fact that all laws are enforced by the barrel of gun.
No, because they think that their mandate comes from people.
Right.
They think if enough people vote them in or a majority of people in society decide on something, then the will of the people negates the gun. That's not really the gun. It's the will of the people.
Not just that, but they don't even see the gun themselves. When they're writing a law, they think, well, this is written down, so now people will do it. Where really, creating more laws only creates more criminals in a lot of ways. Because everything that should be illegal was illegal hundreds of years ago.
Thousands.
Probably not, though. Raping your wife should be legal, but wasn't illegal until about 30 years ago in most states. But, you know, basically in general, violent crimes and stealing and fraud have been illegal since there have been societies.
Right, right. Well, See, what do you mean by illegal then? Because to me, in a voluntary society, we have things that are immoral, things that are wrong, and people will treat you as such based on your reputation for doing things that are moral or doing things that are immoral, your actions, basically. These days, we don't necessarily judge people on their actions. We judge them on what part of the law they broke, what words they didn't follow in some bill or in some law. And it becomes so obtuse that, you know, you have to really know legalese to know what this person is, who they are.
I saw a really excellent sketch that kind of made fun of the idea of government implementation where there needs to be none. It was this show I've really been liking. I told you about the show Peep Show, right?
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
the BBC comedy, which I f***ing love. It's these two guys that are great. That's like a scripted show with plots and episodes, but they also did another one. David Mitchell and Robert Webb are the guys' names. They also did a spinoff called The Mitchell and Webb Look, which is a really dumb name for a TV show, but it's funny. It's them doing sketch comedy. And they have this sketch that's supposed to be two cavemen or early man, you know, at the end of the Stone Age, beginning of the Bronze Age, basically. These two men dressed in furs, you know, in the wilderness, in primitive state thousands of years ago, sitting around chipping arrowheads from rock. And one guy's okay. chipping them and the other is tying them ornately to arrow shafts. They're the people for that tribe that do that. They're the two guys who are really good at it. And this other guy brings another guy from a different tribe over and says he's been sent by the Committee of Area Tribes to usher them into working with bronze so they can enter the Bronze Age. You know, it's this bureaucrat who's sent out to teach them how to work to be in the Bronze Age.
Right. Yeah. Worms.
When in fact that isn't how it happened. The free market took care of it because there weren't really governments back then.
Right, right. See, maybe we need to get past this concept of using the word the free market took care of it.
I know, it sounds like magic. And one of the biggest criticisms of people who think libertarians are crazy is, you know, it, like there's a joke, how many libertarians does it take to change a light bulb? None. The free market will take care of it.
Right, and that cuts to it, right? Because if somebody takes care of it, it's a person doing it. But that doesn't mean that the free market didn't take care of it. The free market's not an entity. When we say it, what we really mean is voluntary human action.
Yeah, the forces of commerce and industry and even things that don't involve commerce, just one person coming up with something. You know, they say it's necessity is the mother of invention is what it is.
No,
bureaucracy is not the mother of invention. It's the crusher of invention.
Right, and that's the point. When we say the free market will take care of something, we mean somebody who wants to make money will figure out that there's a need and they'll go ahead and provide for that need in return for payment.
I saw an interesting example this week. This was really big news. Did you see this one? Australian airline runs out of money, stranding thousands.
Now, what do you mean they stranded thousands?
Like an airline that was in business at 9 in the morning, went out of business at 4 in the afternoon, and like wherever those planes landed, even if you were at the other end of your journey or on a stopover or whatever, the planes just did not carry any more people and the airline was out of business. Which left a lot of people who bought tickets and hadn't gotten on the plane yet, you know, like tickets for the next month that they'll never get to use. Some people, a lot of times when you buy through a travel agent or an agent site, you can pay a couple bucks extra and get insurance against that and you get refunded.
Right.
But a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to save the $12 and not do that. And regardless of whether they had that or not, I mean, this is international flights from continent to continent, you know, with stopovers. So if you're flying from, like, let's say Melbourne, Australia to Japan, and you had a stopover, and you know, the minute the airline went out of business, you were stuck and couldn't get to Japan, your destination, right, or Australia, your home. And people are like, governments or the UN needs to get these people home. And I was thinking, in a free market, what I think would happen would be a competing airline would say to all those people, we'll take care of you and think of us with your next flight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that would be hard to do. And everyone just instantly says, the government should do this, you know?
No, there's a million other ways to do it. Because when you say the government should do this, what you're really saying is an organization should use stolen money that it takes from you at gunpoint and pay for these people that you don't know. Whenever you say the government should do something, you're basically saying, hey, this group of dudes with guns should rob some people and then use that money to take care of it. Hey, isn't that a good idea? That's a good idea, guys. Come on. FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends. FreedomFiends. FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends. FreedomFiends.
Did you know that one of the platforms of UN Agenda 21 is this offspring called the Habitat Conference document, Habitat 2, it's called. And it's really long legalese, but there's one section in it that basically says it's suggested that governments in the future deal with homelessness by taking houses of people who have large houses, letting them still live in one room of it, but making them let homeless people live in the rest of their home.
Wow. Instead of quartering of soldiers, it's quartering of bums.
Yeah, yeah. Which would not violate the Constitution, because they're not soldiers.
It would violate the non-aggression principle.
It would take some soldiers to do that to me. Right. I ain't letting no bums live in my house.
Right, right.
And, you know, to a lot of people who are, like, brainwashed by public school and television, especially really young people who are vulnerable and think everything should be free and groovy and haven't gone out and worked yet, that would make sense. Like, of course, if you have a big house, you should let people live there. And if you don't want to, of course, they should make you.
You think people think that? You think they even go that far to think what happens if they don't want to?
Yeah, I think a lot of little kids would believe that.
I hope not. I hope not.
They teach things like that in public schools, well, not to that extent.
There you go. It depends on the kids. I mean, if you're a kid and you're raised with parents who force you to share with your sister just because you say so, then maybe. And that goes back to our whole concept of that's how we get a free society, is we raise kids knowing and understanding the non-aggression principle.
You know, when you think about nanny laws, really what they're saying is our ideas are so bad we have to force people at gunpoint to do them. Think about it. Right. Like, think about, like, laws against gays marrying or laws against people smoking pot. Those are two things that are, like, anybody who's intelligent can see. Anybody should be able to smoke pot, and anybody should be able to marry anybody they want.
Yeah.
And there are people that, like, their life's work is spent trying to prevent people at gunpoint from doing those things. And basically what they're saying is, our ideas are so horrible, people won't do them naturally, and we have to put guns to their head to make them do our horrible things.
Well, that's how you can view it objectively. But in their twisted minds, which is why the statists are the crazy ones, in their twisted minds, they think that, well, my ideas are so great, and these gay people or these potheads just aren't as enlightened as I. So I will do the morally upright thing and force them to do the proper actions.
You know what's the really bizarre thing? Is I've had conversations with a lot of people who believe gay marriage should be illegal and pot should be illegal. And I am far more intelligent than most of the people I've spoken to who strongly believe those things.
Right, right.
Who strongly believe that they're smarter than me and should take care of, you know. I mean, the people that, like, can't even use an apostrophe S in the correct place in writing, which isn't necessarily indicative of intelligence, but it's indicative of stupidity. But even beyond that, I could just, their eyes are dull and they ain't that smart.
their eyes are kinda dull.
Yeah, yeah.
They ain't the smartest peanut in the turd.
They're, and they do not use logic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Americans aren't taught logic. How many logic classes did you take in school? How many logic classes are there in public school?
None, but I was on the debate team until my experiences with debate team are really similar to Ron White's experiences on debate team, where I said the one thing, the other guy said the other thing, I said my thing, the other guy said the other thing, and I said something like, well, f*** you. The guy's mouth was hanging open. I thought I'd won.
Right.
You know, I remembered something about school. I realized something about my schooling.
Yeah.
Which I'll segue into with, speaking of laws, I have to be enforced at the ideas being enforced at the barrel of a gun. James Davis previously said, public school is so bad they can't give it away. Yeah. He recently came across something that I think we came across 2 years ago, was that in some places they're now paying students to get passable grades with public money. And he said he revised it to, public school, it's so bad we can't pay you to use it. You know, we read those letters from my school. We were talking about our early inklings of anti-disestablishmentarianism. And I remember reading this one. It was like when my public school was telling me I should be sent off to a boarding school. And there was something in there that said something like, we discussed with you earlier about Michael going to a different school in the county, but that didn't seem to work well. So we're suggesting this. And I forgot that at one point I didn't live with my mother and I went and lived with my dad in the house he was living in, like 10 miles away, for like 4 months, and went to this another public school in the county. And I thought that was just a function of, you know, hey, I'm going to go live with my dad for a while. But then I'm thinking about it in context with this letter, and I'm thinking about like some things that were said to me by my parents around the time. And they secretly, they were doing that because the public school told them.
Mm.
They were like, Michael doesn't do well at this school. He needs to go to a different school in the county.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of parents make decisions like that. They make decisions on their kids based on what government bureaucrats say.
With medication and discipline and...
Medication is perhaps the most damaging one. I mean, a lot of drugs, you know, psychoactive drugs can really damage kids and cause them great harm. And yet parents will forgo their own research on this kind of thing and they'll just defer to the bureaucrats because we're taught to believe that if somebody has a job, if they're in a position of power, we should respect them and take them at their word.
There's a really good Doug Stanhope stand-up routine. Do you know him?
Yeah, I know Doug Stanhope.
Libertarian comedian.
Yeah, he does Sacred Cow TV with Joe Rogan over in Austin.
Yeah, and he was on The Man Show with Joe Rogan.
Although I didn't like him on The Man Show.
Well, he has another stand-up thing about how much he hated working on The Man Show, and he was talking about one time that he was smoking DMT with Joe Rogan at the last days of it while writing it, which DMT is like the most psychedelic drug there is, and it lasts about 20 minutes.
What's DMT?
Dimethyltryptamine. It lasts about 20 minutes. It's actually, this is interesting, it is produced in minute quantities by the human brain when you're dying to like help you get into, I don't even know the next world, but just to get through death without being terrified as much. But it's illegal, which is interesting because your body makes it, but it's illegal. So technically...
Everyone's a criminal when they're dying.
Everyone's committing a felony. Well... they should run up and arrest people while they're dying.
They would.
Yeah, he was like, you know, he said basically, it sounded similar to what I said about inhalants, which was, you know, on LSD, I'd forget my name. On ether, I'd forget my species. And he was describing it something similar as that being that out of his head. And he was like, and then Joe took his hit and he was lying on the ground convulsing and saying, I see God and I'm dying and this is great. And I was thinking, maybe Joe really is dying. And I was looking around at the mansion in the Hollywood Hills he lived in and thinking about driving back in an hour to my shitty studio apartment in Echo Park. And then I was thinking, you know, maybe Joe will die. And I don't know if I'd call anybody. I might spend a couple weeks of weekend at Bernie's. Joe can't come to the phone right now. Yeah, he was like, yeah, Joe had that NBC money and I had that Comedy Central money. I was living in a studio apartment.
Right.
But, you know, he has this thing about the only drugs that are legal are the ones that don't feel good and make you a good worker.
Make you a good worker.
Yeah, like, you know, Prozac. Prozac makes you able to have a job and not be depressed and not have highs and not have lows and sit in a cubicle and do your work even though you hate it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's not fun. It's not abusable, as they say.
Right.
You know, nobody would ever, who wasn't indicated to take Prozac, would ever take one and go, this is great, and steal more. You know, right. There'd be no incentive.
And of course, they lace the abusable ones now with poison, basically. Most of your Vicodin, your codeine nowadays have about...
Ibuprofen.
No, not ibuprofen. Tylenol, acetaminophen. Ibuprofen's not as toxic as Tylenol.
Yeah, so basically if you abuse them, it's going to kill your liver.
It's going to kill your liver or kill you. I mean, I think there's only...
Yeah.
It's only like 2,000 milligrams in a day is a lethal dose of Tylenol. So if you take something like 6 to 8 Vicodin pills in a day, you could die. And there's no reason. I mean, really, if you're already taking an opiate like Vicodin or hydrocodone, do you really need that extra Tylenol? And if you really needed it, couldn't you just buy some fucking Tylenol at the store? No, it's poison that the statists put in there so that people who want to abuse drugs die.
Yep.
Fuckers. Fuckers.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, Nima, did you see those two films I recommended, Limitless and Interview with the Assassin?
I can't say that I have.
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit. I'm going to assign them and then... other people and you can watch them and we'll discuss them. They're both by the same director. Interview with the Assassin is an older thing he did. Neil Berger is the director's name. Limitless is a new one. Limitless, you've probably seen an ad on TV for it. It's about a guy who comes across a drug that basically makes you about 100 times as smart as you are. And he goes from being an underemployed writer in a crappy apartment to being at the top of Wall Street in about 2 months. From taking this drug.
Okay.
Robert De Niro's in it.
Oh, maybe I have seen an ad for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And his older movie from about 10 years ago is called Interview with the Assassin, which is about an out-of-work TV cameraman, young guy, early 20s, who has this neighbor who's this crazy old coot, who's actually played by the guy who plays the father in the Dewey Cox story.
Dewey Cox. Is that the Walk Hard?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I have seen
that. You know, the father who's constantly going, the wrong kid died.
Yeah.
That's the actor who plays this crazy old Marine, ex-Marine, retired guy who's dying of cancer and wants to get this confession out. And he's like to his neighbor, like, oh, you're a camera guy. You know news people. Come over and film me. I want to tell you a story. Basically, he says that he was the second shooter on the grassy knoll. He's the one who shot Kennedy.
Ah.
And... intrigue happens from that point on.
Of course.
Yeah, it's really good. Really, really good movie.
What's it called again?
It's called Interview with the Assassin. I actually watched it on President's Day. I didn't mean to. I just noticed halfway through it that it was President's Day and I was watching it.
You mean Evil Status Day?
Yes, on the Fiends calendar. Yeah, but it's shot kind of cinema verite style. Like, it's almost a cross between like Blair Witch Project and JFK. In style.
Okay, okay.
You know, it's a lot of handheld analog video camera. You know, it's like the kid following him around the country, going on adventures, trying to find the truth and prove this.
Sounds good.
My only suspension of disbelief with it was when he takes the kid out shooting and the kid's like afraid of the rifle. He's like, what's wrong, kid? You never held a gun? Pick that gun up and shoot it. A Marine would not call a rifle a gun. A Marine would call a rifle a rifle. Till the day he dies.
Okay, okay. So you mean your only non-suspension of disbelief?
Yep, my only one.
Your only disbelief?
Yeah, my only disbelief. My only suspension of disbelief. Yeah, anybody in the U.S. military would call a rifle, you know. This is my rifle. This is my gun. And when you say this is my gun, you grab your crotch. This one's for fighting. This one's for fun. That's how they teach you the difference.
So a rifle isn't in a category of guns. Guns not an umbrella term that would include rifles, shotguns, and pistols.
No, U.S. military call rifles rifles.
Got it. Okay.
It's beaten into him practically. It just would not come out of a Marine's mouth.
Well, that makes sense. Might as well be more specific. I mean, obviously, a rifle or a carbine is much more different than your sidearm.
Well, actually, also because in the military, a gun is often a cannon-type weapon.
Ah, I see.
You know, like...
like a gun on a battleship.
On a ship. Is it? Right. They would call that a gun. Yeah.
Right, right. Which is why when I was a kid, I always wondered... there's that scene in Terminator 2 where he's got that Gatling gun, but I think they call it a minigun. And I'm like, how's that a fucking minigun? It's like a million times bigger than any other gun. Well, because it was a minigun on a battleship.
Right.
Compared to a giant cannon.
And it's not a Gatling gun. A Gatling gun was a particular type of machine gun. It was one of the first machine guns.
I see. Well, it was a gun with multiple barrels that spun in like a revolver, basically. The barrels were the revolving part.
Right. So anyway, I recommend both those movies. I learned a good term the other day. Do you know what the term for podcasting done by churches, religious podcasting, is called?
Godcasting?
Yes.
I just came up with... I guess it's kind of obvious.
Yep. I actually have a story about meeting one of the premier godcasters who actually... I met him at the 2007 Podcasting Awards at the New Media Convention in Ontario, California, where my wife and I spent our first wedding anniversary.
Ah. All right. There's the touch of hubris there to call yourself a godcaster then, isn't it?
I know. It sounds like you're God. Yeah. But no, you're casting about God.
Right.
But yeah, we were doing a podcast at the time, my wife and I, which was a sex cast called Submission and Coffee with Dalai Lama, DollyLlama.
Yeah.
That was the name she used. And we went to this podcasting expo. We spent most of the time in the hotel room, but we went to a couple of the awards things. Free Talk Live actually won Best Political Podcast that year.
Yeah.
I remember. And this guy won Best Religious Podcast. His name is Father Roderick Vonhagen, I think is how you say it. He's from the Netherlands. Really sweet guy. I met him. I was walking around with my Zoom H2, the same one that I'm talking into right now. And I saw a priest walking around and he was talking to a lot of different people. And I was like, a priest? Interesting. And, you know, I'm not religious. And I went to an Episcopal boarding school and liked the priest at our school because he took us to CES and he was anti-war and so was I. But, you know, I never really put much credence in priests being better than other people or anything like that. But I was just intrigued to see a priest walking around with all these hipsters. At first, I thought it was someone in a costume. And then I just kind of like looked at his demeanor and then like heard some of the things he was saying to other people. And he was a priest. Here's why I went up to him. He had a Zoom H2 also. And this is right when they came out and not many people had him. And he and I were both walking around talking into our studio on a stick.
Yeah.
And I said, excuse me, Father, would you bless my Zoom H2?
What do you say?
It was recording and he could see that it was recording. And he said, of course I would. But actually, I would also have to bless the user of the Zoom H2. What is your name, my friend? I said, Michael Dean. And he did this really eloquent prayer on the spot, like held my hand and said, Heavenly Father, please bless Michael to speak the truth and a message of light. It was kind of this almost secular, you know, he wasn't saying, and your glory or anything like that. He was one of those young, hip Dutch priests who knew how to speak to people without turning them off.
This was while you were recording for a kinky sex podcast.
Right. And we actually used this in the kinky sex podcast. And he was real sweet. And I liked his kindness and his humanity and his sincerity. And I thanked him. You know, he blessed me and my Zoom H2. And then we walked around a little more, talked to some other people. And then I went back up to the hotel room and was really excited about it being our anniversary and having a great time. And I was eating peanuts, watching TV, watching Nature Channel, talking about Antarctica and penguins. And DJ and I were loving it. And I was talking to DJ and I was standing up and I was gesticulating and eating peanuts. And I started to fucking choke and I nearly choked to death on a peanut on my first wedding anniversary about a half hour after being blessed by a Catholic priest. I don't know if his blessing had anything to do with it. Maybe when you bless me, it almost kills me. Or maybe I would have died and his blessing saved me. Or maybe probably it had nothing to do with it. But it was an interesting thing to have happen right after being blessed.
I guess so. So you almost pulled a George Bush and choked on a snack food.
It was like, I mean, DJ was getting up to give me Heimlich maneuver. It was the closest I've ever come to choking to death. And it was weird because it just went down the wrong way. Because I used to like drink booze and take heroin and shove pizza down my throat while walking and talking, but never choked like this.
Just not safe to have nuts in your mouth.
There you go.
There ought to be a law.
There ought to be a law.
There ought to, we should outlaw those damn peanuts choking all these people.
Well, they kind of have in a way, because now that it comes out that people have fatal peanut allergies, which, you know, didn't happen when I was a kid. I'd never heard of that when I was a kid. But now it's like, I think some schools outlaw them, and there's all sorts of rules with dealing with peanuts and other food and labelings and things like that.
I guess there's no problem with information. I mean, there's no problem with a company deciding they want to label things or put a warning or say, hey, there's peanuts in here. Or you see that little thing at the bottom of the ingredients that says contains peanuts, soy, etc.
Or used in a factory that also prepares foods that contain peanuts.
Right, exactly. And there's no problem with that. And I think that companies who do that are good companies. They're honest companies. But it should never be a requirement.
You know, I've seen it in action. I was eating peanuts one time. And I walked up to this girl that was a friend of mine, wasn't dating or anything, but like kissed her on the lips lightly, just in a friendly way. You know, it was something that was acceptable between us as friends. And she smelled and went, Michael, have you been eating peanuts? And I said, yeah. And she said, I am deathly allergic to peanuts. And she ran and like washed her face with soap, and her whole mouth got puffy just from like me giving her a not even very wet kiss on the lips after eating peanuts.
The kiss of death.
Yeah. It's because I've been blessed by a Catholic priest.
I guess so.
Do you know what illiteracy is?
L-literacy?
A, it's like literacy with the letter A in front of it.
How's it different from illiteracy?
Illiteracy is the ability to read but no interest in doing so.
Like being asexual.
Yeah. It's what a lot of PSAs now are directed at by, you know, government grants. Now that most people can read in America,
right,
they try to like force people to want to.
Yeah, until they start reading things that the government does not approve.
There you go. There's actually a really funny takeoff on that kind of PSA in a Simpsons episode. I think they show it more than once. In Bart and Lisa's school, there's a poster in one of the classrooms that, you know, it has Woodsy the owl, you know, the give a hoot, don't pollute owl.
Uh-huh.
But it says, give a hoot, read a book.
Right, of course. Because the people who write the PSAs aren't writers. They're bureaucrats.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Talk about how the drug war is a holy war, or treated like one.
Do you think the drug war is a holy war?
I read that in passing somewhere, and it really made a lot of sense to me. I mean, in the sense that, like, people will suspend logic and have a huge military system for kicking in people's doors because they're apostates, because they do what is not accepted by society, even if it's harmless.
Right. Yeah, I see that, but I see it as part of the larger problem that the state is the new religion. The government is the new god. People think that if you cross the government, it's like a sin. You know, in the old days, you were a sinner. These days, you're a criminal.
Well, governments have kind of replaced the church. I mean, at one point in history, you know, from 300 or 400 AD until 1600 or 1700 AD, the Catholic Church, the church, took the role that governments take now, and governments were much smaller. You know, even when there was a king, the king was beholden to the church.
When I talk to people who are statists or who are older, you know, sometimes those are groups that cross over. They seem to have this sort of, it's wrong no matter whatever you do. If it's illegal, you've done something wrong. It's bad. You should face the punishment, whether it be speeding or murder.
I know, you talked about that last time, about the lady who said that.
Yeah.
It blew my mind. I forgot to comment on that, but that's mind-blowing that someone would say, it doesn't matter whether it's speeding or murder. If you break a law, it's equally wrong.
Right, right. And I might have talked about it on another cast where I had to do a story about people talking on their cell phones while they were driving. And my news director wanted me to go stand in the middle of a median on a busy intersection and try to videotape people talking on their cell phones. She wanted me to go so far as to come up to their windows with cameras and be like, why are you breaking the law?
Well, she actually wanted you to put yourself in danger too. I think standing on the median of a busy street is kind of dangerous.
I mean, I was never worried about safety or danger when I guess I was worried about my own safety, but something like that I felt like I could handle. I wasn't concerned with myself. What I was more concerned with was being a fucking busybody of the state and trying to harass people because they had a conversation to make while they were driving. Because I don't give a f-. When I got back to the station, I was like, yeah, you know, there was like 17 people I videotaped talking on their cell phones or whatever. I'll mention it in the thing. And the anchor was like, ugh, it's so horrible. And I was like, why do you think so? And he's like, it's the law, you know, it's the same as, it's like saying I went and saw 17 bank robberies today. No, it's not at all.
And the federal government is actually trying to pass federal laws against texting now.
Ugh.
They're trying to do it through the Department of Transportation, you know, go around the Congress to do it,
right?
Which more and more is happening.
Right.
I've heard some interesting stuff lately about unintended consequences of this attitude of, we need more laws, we need more laws, other than it makes everyone into a criminal. You know, there's that book, Three Felonies a Day, which basically says there are so many laws that everybody commits three felonies a day without even knowing it. I was listening to Bad Quaker the other day, and he was talking about the history of piracy, and I didn't know any of this. Do you know anything about the history of piracy, of pirates, you know, roaming the seas, pirates?
Only from what I learned from Bad Quaker.
You heard that episode?
Yeah, I heard that cast too.
It was awesome.
It was funny because I was listening to that cast and checking my Facebook, and then Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, had posted, I'm listening to the Freedom Fiends right now. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I'm listening to you.
Yeah. And I always go back to like, yeah, it's like my punk rock days back in the early 80s where like, you know, you'd have five bands at a show. They'd each play a 30 or 40 minute set, and everybody would be the audience for the other bands. And then the people that weren't in bands ran fanzines and wrote about the shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, you and I and Ben have bigger audiences than that, actually, than a lot of those bands did. You know, which is one reason I'm really into podcasting. It's like, when my first band came out, my first record came out, you know, it took us 3 years to sell 1,000 copies of it. And those copies are still around, and people still write me and say, hey, I found this in a record store. You guys are great. I found you on the internet. Thanks for making this in 1985. But you and I are doing this right now, and it's going to take a lot less work to edit than it took to write and record that music.
Yeah.
And it's going to reach more than 1,000 people tonight. I'll sum up his history of pirates. Basically, it was England and Spain and Portugal, the kings and queens of those countries wanted to fight wars with other countries, but it was too expensive to have a full navy. So what they would do is they would issue letters of marque, which basically meant, okay, you, guy with a boat, king of England, says you can go out and steal from any boats of other countries that we don't like on the open seas and take whatever you want. And that weakened those other countries, which militarily strengthened the home country. Eventually, the kings and queens of those countries, the governments changed to an extent to where they stopped issuing letters of marque, but people were so into doing that for a living that they just did it under their own flag, the pirate flag.
Right.
And it got to the point where in a lot of those countries, especially in England, in the British Empire, laws were so excessive to the point where, like, if you stole an apple and were starving and stole an apple off a cart, you could be sentenced to death. And people said basically, well, if I'm going to be killed for anything, no matter what, I might as well go join a pirate crew and make more money and have more fun.
Right. Not only that, it was better than being in the actual Navy.
Yeah.
Because you could keep more of the spoils of the theft.
Yeah. And the way that they drafted people into the Navy was they'd take people who didn't look right or didn't have a job or weren't part of society and hit them over the head and they'd wake up on a Navy ship.
Right.
So basically, when the moral of the story is when the military forces everybody to be in it through conscription or through ruining the economy to the point where it seems like the only option, in conjunction with making more and more and more laws for stupid shit and making the penalties worse and worse and worse, it turns people into real criminals. And that happens with the drug war too, in a way. Like, people get arrested for weed and get a stiff sentence and spend a year in prison, not jail. You know, they go to prison for a while because they were selling a little weed to make ends meet. And when they get out, they can't get a job because they're a convicted felon. And they lost their car or their house because they confiscated that because they were dealing. It's like they either go on welfare or they become criminals.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a horrible system to where once you're in it, it's a vicious cycle. And it's not necessarily, I mean, you might have some role to play in it because there are stories of people turning it around. But the state stacks the deck against you to where it's really hard. My friend Anthony, I met him and he just got done doing 5 years in prison. And recently I found out that he's going back to prison. I asked him why. He said, attempt to sell a bag of weed to a cop. And I'm like, really? Really, you're going to have to spend 5 years in jail for trying to give somebody something they asked you for.
Yeah.
And it just...
What was he originally in for?
Well, it wasn't. He did break the non-aggression principle the first time he went in, but he was young and stupid, and I don't know if he should have spent 5 years and then been a felon after it and had his life ruined. He should have just paid the money back. In his late teens, like maybe 18 or something, and a friend of his and him worked at this place, and his friend grabbed the payroll checkbook, and they each wrote themselves a $500 check. And so, yeah, it's bad. It's wrong. But I don't know if it's 5 years and then you're a felon after that wrong.
I don't think it's 5 years wrong. And it's certainly not wrong to where if you sell something that should be as illegal as zucchini, you get five more years. But if you're elected, you can steal much more than that and not only not go to jail, you get thanked for it. It's a prestigious thing to do. It's respected to steal in office.
Right, right. Well, after you come out, you know, that's the thing. Prison doesn't reform anybody. He had spent 5 years with harder criminals,
yeah,
learning criminal things.
Which was covered really well in first person in your interview with...
with Larkin.
Yeah, Larkin Rose.
And so he comes out, he's a felon. You know, he can't... it's so hard for him to find a job. And what does he do after that? He wants to make a little extra money on the side. He's got a daughter. He's a fan of weed, a connoisseur of weed. So he ends up selling some and ends up going back to prison for 5 years. For a non-crime, too, because there's no victim in that. When you try to sell pot to a cop, I mean, yeah, who did you hurt?
It's entrapment, too, I would say. You know, another thing that you're talking about, severe penalties, Los Angeles County has now made it so it's a $1,000 fine for throwing a football or a frisbee on a beach.
Well, see, I clicked on that link, though, and they were backtracking on it. The city officials were saying, no, 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 because I guess it went viral. And so I don't know if they went back and changed the law or if they went back and reinterpreted it.
See, that's one reason why the internet's great. And I don't know that it changes the world or caused the Arab Spring or anything changed from the Arab Spring. But in some cases, stuff that politicians try to do behind closed doors, when it gets out to the public, it embarrasses them and they worry about their job and they change a little bit.
No, it's a great thing. It's a great check. You want to talk about checks and balances? That's the real check on power.
The internet.
Is the internet.
So another thing about pirates.
Another thing about pirates. All right. What's up with pirates, Mike?
Which, you know, has valid parallels with what's called piracy now, which is, you know, listening to music online. The more you make someone, you know, more laws isn't going to stop people from doing things. It's just going to make more criminals.
Right.
The thing about pirates that Ben didn't mention that I found from my research was that another reason people preferred to join pirate ships instead of to stay with society being told what to do was at that time, pirate ships actually had a form of democracy and the general society in England did not.
Huh, I remember hearing a little bit about that, how society worked on a pirate ship. Do you have any more? I heard it was more than democratic.
Well, the one thing I remember was that the captain of the ship was chosen by the crew, not the other way around.
Okay.
What do you got, though?
I don't have anything. I'd remember vaguely hearing about it. I was asking you.
Well, I will link Pirate Democracy article on Wikipedia then.
Okay, sounds good. We'll check that out.
Yep. That'd be a good name for a band.
Pirate Democracy.
You know what? I think it'd be a good name for a band, too. Not as good as that, but a different band, kind of a jokey band, would be Ghost Flush.
Ghost Flush?
Yeah, because we have the, sometimes we're upstairs in our house and it sounds like the toilet's flushing downstairs. Like the, you know, the pipes are filling up, like as if someone's flushed.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up, I was like, what is that? We kept calling them Ghost Flushes. And I searched the term Ghost Flush on Google and a bunch of articles written by plumbers came up. It basically means that the flapper in your toilet is broke and it's thinking it's not full and flushing and filling up from time to time. It happens about 5 times a day.
Ah, I see.
So you just got to call a plumber because we have a ghost flush.
We have a ghost flushing. Call Ghostbusters instead, man.
Who are you going to call?
Ghost Flushers.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
So I've been wanting to make myself a back scabbard for my shotgun, an open carry my shotgun.
A back scabbard. Yeah, good luck with that.
Why good luck with that?
I don't know. Because it'd be legal, but I think it would attract a lot of unwanted attention to you.
I think it would too. I mostly just want to make something.
There you go.
I was trying to research it and, you know, there's this game I play called Red Dead Redemption, which I love.
That's one where the government's the enemy, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Every other cutscene is how... how silly the government is and how they're f***ing up society, which is really great.
It's the Old West, right?
The Old West, yeah.
Wait, I thought that was Red Dead Revolver is the Old West.
They're both the Old West. Red Dead Redemption is the sequel to Red Dead Revolver.
Okay.
But the thing about it is, unfortunately, it does forward the narrative that the Old West was a bunch of people murdering each other 24/7.
Yeah, which was not true.
Which was not true. Historians have researched it, I think Tom Woods as well, to where the Old West was really a lot more peaceful than a lot of people think. I think there was like two bank robberies in the matter of a few decades or something like that.
But there was kind of vigilante justice of like when someone f***ed up and they didn't have a judge in that town and the circuit judge wasn't coming through for 2 months, they'd just have a citizen's trial and hang them. I heard an excellent old-timey term for death by hanging.
Oh, yeah?
You know, because ropes were made out of hemp.
Right.
They called it dancing the hempen jig. The only time marijuana is ever lethal is to hang somebody with.
Right. Exactly.
Dancing the hempen jig.
But from what I understand, there was also sort of anarchic, not justice, but order.
Yeah.
In the way things worked in the Old West. Gold miners would respect each other's claims. They could leave their bags of gold there and not have to worry about them being stolen. And, you know, pardon the pun, but it was kind of a golden rule kind of thing. It was, I'm not going to steal your gold because we don't want to live in this prospecting community where we have to worry about us getting our gold stolen.
If someone stole gold, would they be killed or run out of the area or what?
I'm not sure. I would assume either or. I guess there's probably mixed results on something like that.
So it was a mixed system of forgiveness, shunning, and death by dancing the hempen jig, probably.
Probably. Maybe more research is warranted if we're going to have this conversation. I just feel like in that kind of a social order where things are more on a case-by-case basis and between individuals, where you understand that society is based between individuals rather than institutions on top, then you can have a system where I think things get played out more fairly, more often.
You know, I've actually read theses. I've read articles that are well researched, which is, you know, about as academic as the Freedom Fiends get, is saying, yeah, I read some article that said, I read some academic article, I can't remember who wrote it, that said that the so-called Wild West, the Old West in America, in this part of the country too, you know, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, etc., Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, that part of the country in that period of time was one of the closest to workable anarchy and libertarianism that is an anarcho-capitalism that has ever existed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for one part of the Viking history, too, which to a lot of people would be like, yeah, Vikings and cowboys, they just all killed everybody all the time. But that actually wasn't true.
Well, why do you think that narrative is out there then? That narrative is out there to keep people from looking into it as a viable option.
Probably because history is written by the victors. You know,
exactly.
Cowboys wrote cowboy songs and poetry that a lot of times weren't remembered. And the history was written by scholars published by the industrialists.
Yeah.
Who wanted to stamp that out and take their land.
Exactly.
And replace them.
That was a good tangent. I don't regret that tangent. But my original point was this dude, John Marston. He's got this badass, it's like a holster. It's just like a leather strap across his shoulder. Like he goes diagonally across his body. And he'll put whatever rifle or whatever long gun he has at the time in there. And I don't think that really would work in real life. But I do want the ability to strap my shotgun diagonally pointing downwards across my back so that I could pull it out with one hand and be ready with the shotgun.
Well, one thing I'd be careful with that is if you're arcing it from the position on your back to able to shoot it, it's going to muzzle sweep a lot of things in that sweep.
That's true. That's true.
It's going to sweep everything in like a 340 degree circle from behind you to in front of you.
No, it'd be about 180 degrees.
No, because if it's pointing down when it's on your back, right?
Right. Okay, so it'd be more than 180. It'd be like 270. It wouldn't be a full 360.
It'd be 3/4 of a circle. It'd be 270.
Yeah, that's the case. But I'm planning on leaving the safety on until it's ready.
I mean, you know, in a free world, you'd have a sawed-off shotgun in a side holster. It'd be safer.
There you go. Or in a thigh holster.
Yeah. One of the cool things in Wyoming everyone should visit when they come here is the Cody Museum in Cody, the Buffalo Bill Cody Museum.
The gun museum.
Well, it's actually five museums. It's an Indian museum, gun museum, Western Art Museum, Natural History of Wyoming Museum, and Wildlife of Wyoming Museum.
But they make you pay for all of them, even if you only want to see the gun museum.
Right. But it's worth it if you have a whole day to see all of them. It's like 17 bucks or something. I don't know. It might be 35. I forget. But it's worth it to go once. In the gun museum, I mean, they have the largest publicly accessible gun collection in the world. It's pretty fabulously amazing. Like, any gun you can think of and any you can't think of are there. But one of the things they have is a sawed-off shotgun that was made for sale to the public in the 20s before they outlawed them.
Nice.
And it has a little picture in a manual with it of like some thug trying to climb in a woman's car and her pointing it at him. Which now is the ad. Basically, they have an updated cartoonized colored ad of that same thing to advertise those little
the ones that shoot 410 shells.
The Derringers that shoot 410 shells, yeah.
Which is cool, I guess, but I'd rather my wife have the sawed off, honestly.
You want your wife to carry it, to conceal carry a sawed off shotgun?
Hell yeah, wouldn't that be badass?
That's highly, highly illegal.
My wife really liked shooting the shotgun. I took her out shooting on Sunday.
You're saying you wish it were legal for her to do that, not she's going to do that. To be clear. So you went out and got hassled by the police anyway for your shotgun this weekend.
Sort of hassled. They were actually nice. I remember thinking that, you know, if I was in Austin, if I was in Texas, this could have gotten a lot stickier.
Which is funny because everyone thinks of Austin as, you know, Yosemite Sam country where everyone runs around with a gun all the time anyway. But it's not as friendly, gun friendly as a place as a lot of these square states up here.
No. As lefty as Washington State is, their gun laws are actually better than Texas's.
Washington State was actually the first state that was shall issue for concealed carry permits. They've had it since like the 70s.
Ah.
A lot of people think it was Florida because Florida made a lot of press when they did it. And I think they were one of the first states, or the first, them or Colorado passed Castle Doctrine first, which made a lot of press because they called it the Make My Day Law, which makes it sound like every gun owner wants to shoot somebody, which is not true.
Well, of course, some news director made that lineup.
I'm sure.
But yeah, we were out shooting. My wife loved the shotgun. We were shooting skeet, shooting clays. She had a blast of it. And, you know, these three Franklin County sheriffs pass us and we're like, oh, they slow down. It's on this dirt road that's along the banks of the Columbia, and it dead ends at this cliff, basically, where you can just shoot at the hill, and so nothing is a backstop, a natural backstop. And that spot was taken, so we were along the sides of the river shooting.
You were shooting out onto the river, right?
We were shooting skeet out onto the river, so it was birdshot. I mean, there was like two boats we saw within an hour, and we stopped shooting for the whole time where we could see the boats. And it's the Columbia, so it's, I don't know, almost a mile wide. It's super wide. On the other end is Hanford, so it's the nuclear waste dump where they developed the plutonium to incinerate people back in the Cold War. Anyway, they ended up coming back for us, and I'm holding my shotgun when he pulls up. So I guess I did the right thing by putting the shotgun in the trunk and approaching him without holding the shotgun. Gets out. He was nice enough. I said, you know, hey, how you doing? Because I'm always trying to be really cordial when the cops come. I'll never let them search me. I won't let them do anything. But I won't take that line where I don't have to tell you nothing, copper. You know, because then they're going to be more belligerent to me.
Yeah, we know a lot of people that do that to flex their rights and supposedly educate cops. But I'm wary about doing that personally.
What I do is I smile and I don't compromise myself, but I smile and I'm friendly.
There you go.
Tone is like 80% of anything.
Because the thing is too, you know, a lot of people go out of their way to flex their right with cops or even get into situations where they can flex it and film it. But it's like, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, they can do whatever they want to you. You know, it's your word. You have three cops against two citizens. They could fucking beat you up and plant on you and
oh yeah,
shoot you and say you came at him with a shotgun.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I got a gun on me. I got multiple guns in the car. If there was any kind of altercation, all they'd have to do is shoot me and say, well,
put one of your guns in your hand is all they'd have to do.
Yeah, that's all they'd have to do. And the reporters would come out and they wouldn't even care about the gun in my hand. All they'd say was, his car had guns in it. Oh my God. Yeah,
literally the guy who took your job when you quit would come out and film the story and spin it their way.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, I said, hey, how you doing? He was like, oh, pretty good. How are you? I was like, good. he was like, well, you shooting out towards the river? And I was all like, yeah, yeah, we was just shooting some bird shot over it. And he's like, okay, okay. We came by at the other end because we had got some complaints from boaters. And so we're just out here because we have to be, pretty much. And I was like, oh, okay. Just make sure, you know, you're being safe. And this is Army Corps of Engineers land. So if we get too many complaints, the Corps of Engineers will have to shut it down. So just
Corps of Engineers will have to build something to keep you out.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, and just make sure you clean up a bit when you're done. And I was like, oh, okay. And he just left. So I felt really respected. He didn't take the line of don't do this because I'm telling you to. He took the line of be careful or those other more evil bureaucrats will shut this thing down.
That's funny.
Which, you know, I think could only happen from a rural county sheriff. If I was in Austin, they would have pointed their guns at me. They wouldn't have slowed down and got the other guys and came back.
And you want to move there for some reason.
To Texas?
Yeah, that's why I said, bleh!
If it were my choice, I'd move to like Argentina or Costa Rica. But my wife has family and she wants to be near family. And if that's important to her, so be it. And I love Texas. I have family there. And like I said before, Texas is a great place. I love everything about it pretty much except for the government and the cops. So as long as I can try to avoid them, which I've gotten pretty good at, you know, I've lived in Texas for a while, then I think I'll be okay.
Well, if you end up in jail in Texas, I don't know how much I could afford to accept collect calls, but I'll mail you stamps and you can write me long letters and I'll read them on the podcast.
Okay.
And if I'm in jail, I want you to do the same thing. I mean, if one of us is in jail, I want the other one to be podcasting about the injustice 24/7.
Okay. You know? Like Free Talk Live did when Ian went to jail?
Yeah.
Okay. Deal.
Yeah. Or, you know, interview other people, keep the ball rolling, and keep contact from the person in jail with the podcast audience.
Well, you see, you just send the carrier pigeon into my jail room.
You could be the Birdman of Washington. Be the Birdman of what's the prison in Austin. I don't know.
I don't even remember what. I guess I wouldn't be in the county jail. I'd probably be in Huntsville if they sent me to the pen.
You'd probably, if you did something really serious, or if, which you wouldn't do, but if they set you up on something serious, you might even be in Colorado in the Supermax, and then I could go visit you.
There you go.
You'd be living closer.
See, what they'd do with me is they'd just drone me.
Yeah.
They'd take a picture of me and Photoshop my beard a bit longer,
yeah,
and they'd call me an insurgent.
You know, when Rowan Dow made the new Freedom Fiends t-shirt, and I approved the design, and we wrote back a little bit back and forth, he said, do you think I have my own personal drone with my name on it now?
Yes, yes. We've all been assigned drones.
Yes.
There's whole teams of government military bureaucrats thinking about droning us.
Yep, and they've got the kids who are the best video game players being trained to be the drone pilots. And they say libertarians are crazy. So I would answer with, are libertarians crazy? No. We're considered crazy in a crazy world, but we're the sane ones.
Yeah, yeah. Or who knows, maybe we are the crazy ones.
You know, I saw this article the other day that said, a big tax present for 160 million wage earners, and it was about how Congress had decided to put off raising the payroll tax. And I'm like, that's not a present.
No.
That's not stealing as much as quickly.
Yeah.
That's delaying more theft. And they're calling that a present?
Mm.
That's horizontal enforcement, man.
That is horizontal enforcement. And it's disgusting. And they're the crazy ones.
I had some horizontal enforcement blowback the other week. I've talked about how in a restaurant or on the internet, when I hear people saying bullshit, I'll call it bullshit and tell them why. There was this friend of a friend of a friend. It was a friend of the girlfriend of an actual friend, like someone who's been in my house kind of friend.
Yeah.
You know, 3 degrees of separation of someone I don't know. I've never communicated with this guy on Facebook. And some other girl had said something about, we're actually talking about steroids. And she said, people who use any needle drugs should be put to death.
What?
And I said, that's crazy statist bullshit and it's mean, was my reply
yeah.
to her. And all of a sudden, her brother, who I'd never heard of, came on here and said, you know, if you say anything else like that to my sister, I'm going to put you in a f-ing wheelchair.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like they come from a really upright family, huh?
Yeah. And I talked to my friend who knows this guy, and he was like, yeah, I've met that guy. It's not a serious threat. It's just Facebook loudmouthiness.
I think it is, too. It reminds me of just dogs, you know, in a yard trying to show off their balls. You know how the little dog will get beat up by the bigger dog when they're both barking at the passerby?
It just reminds me of, and I think I've talked about this before, a girl I know and a guy I know. The girl's been kind of unlucky in love. You know, she's had a series of crappy, emotionally abusive boyfriends. And she finally met a guy who's really, really, really cool. and, you know, invited her brother over for dinner with the two of them. And he was, you know, kind of civil and nice for a while. And then after dinner, he whispered to the boyfriend, "I like you, but if you break my sister's heart, I'm going to fucking kill you." And sounded totally serious. And that's like, what kind of crazy aggression initiating, you know, non-loving thing is that? I mean, I guess him and this other guy were trying to show love for their sister by threatening a stranger, but it's such caveman behavior and there's no need for it. And it doesn't show love. It shows insanity.
It's nothing but showing that you have nuts. And if you have to show that you have nuts, it means you're scared that your nuts are too small.
Worms.
All right.
Good cast.
Peace.
Peace. Hello, I'm Michael Dean.
And I'm Nima Vedati.
This educational documentary will undoubtedly upset some people who get a boner from preying on the rights of others.
Therefore, we'd like to say this on record. If either of us are ever facing any felony charges, the thing was planted or the evidence otherwise manufactured.
And if either of us is ever found dead of a drug overdose, a car crash, or an apparent suicide, there was probably a government agency behind it.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.